Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Labor Day is often considered the traditional time when voters start paying attention to who they're going to vote for. Of course, that was before 24/7 news and social media, but with just over a little over 2 months to go before the November election, the results of the latest Franklin and Marshall College poll can give us a good idea of what voters in Pennsylvania are thinking. Joining us today is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, pollster and political analyst with Franklin and Marshall College. Dr. Madonna, welcome to the program.
As always, thanks for having me, Scott.
And if you'd like to weigh in, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I'll start off by asking about that introduction I just said, traditionally Labor Day. But it seems as though nowadays political races are going on after the first day after the election, the last election.
Yeah. Well, look, the presidential election of 2020 is underway.
You wouldn't
disagree with that,
no,
would you?
Not at all.
And I mean, what's amazing now is this intense polarization that exists. It's hard, even in the course of when we're not into high drama. I can't even say that anymore. High drama season is any day.
That's right.
Out of 365, right?
Yeah.
But here's the bigger point. The polarization is so great that it's hard to have a real solid, you know, neutral discussion, because the Democrats, if you say anything nice, let's say, about President Trump, or you agree with President Trump, then they're all over you. And the converse is true for Republicans. I mean, the polarization is so extreme in our country right now. I mean, if you take a look at, say, the job performance of President Trump, the number of Democrats who give him a positive job performance in poll after poll, single digits. You hear? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%. That's it. And remarkably, his job performance, his positive job performance among his own party, Republicans, is at historic highs, 88% in some national polls of Republicans support the president. And I mean, imagine that. That's something we've not seen. It surpasses anything we've seen historically.
Well, okay, let's talk about history. How does that compare? That 86%, it is very rare that anything in a poll gets 86% approval rating. Yeah. How does it compare with, like, say, George W. Bush
or
George H.W. Bush
or
President Reagan?
It's higher.
It's higher.
Yeah.
Amongst Republicans.
Yeah, it's higher. The bottom line here is this largely has to do with the polarization that exists that's so extreme. You find very few people that you'll have a discussion with that will say, I'm going to split my ticket. Ticket splitting is now relatively minimal. I think in the election coming up, I'll bet you we don't have 10-15% of the voters who will split. I'm just surmising now. I have no scientific evidence that will split their ticket just from the conversations. That would be a good question to put in one of our polls at FNM. I get suggestions all the time. One is, where does the legalization of recreational marijuana stand? Oh, no. 54%, we had the first poll, it's like 2 years ago now, that showed support for the legalization of recreational marijuana. And I don't want to get sidetracked on it, but it does show you the changes that are taking place in the modern era.
I know I've asked you this question before, but after just pointing out those differences between President Trump's approval ratings, as a pollster who has done this for a long time, have you ever seen numbers like that? Any kind of division that comes even close?
No. We're in record territory. Moderates are being squeezed literally out of the political debate. And again, if you're a moderate and you say you can't, here's the expression you can't use, on the other hand, because, you know, that leads you to some explanation. For example, if you say Trump has done anything good and you're a Democrat, you won't admit to it. And the converse is true for Republicans. So it makes what few independent analysts are left, you're stuck. you know, you're stuck in the middle without anywhere to go. And for example, when I do polls that show Democrats winning, Republicans get all over me and get all over the poll.
That somehow it's biased,
and
right.
Somehow, and the reverse is true as well. Now, I expect campaign people to do that. That's what they're paid for. You know, you expect the people who are running campaigns to disagree or to find things in
them. Try to put a good spin on it.
Yeah, and I don't mind a good, honest discussion about the methodology. As you know, Burwood Yost is a methodologist for the poll. He does a great job. And you can, you know, there are always differences that you can find. And I don't mind that. But when they say, oh, Madonna, I know what you're doing here. You rigged the poll. You fixed the poll. I mean, that's way, way overboard.
And, you know, Terry, that's something that you didn't hear. Yeah. Even just a few years ago.
Yep, that's
the word
exactly
rigged
right.
In relationship yep. to our politics today is something yeah. you didn't hear just a few years ago. All right, so let's get into the poll.
Okay.
Not necessarily numbers, but what they mean. Since we've been talking about the president, other than the state races, Donald Trump is what's on everyone's mind for this election.
Unbelievable.
What does the poll say about that?
Well, let's start out with the framework. Midterm elections are essentially a referendum on the president. And we can go back into the 19th century, and that's true, a referendum on the president. Number two, the president's party historically does not do well in midterms.
Is the first, after the first election, after he's been elected, or midterms period?
Or midterms period.
Okay.
Something like, I think it's 31 of 39 midterms have been lost by the president's party. But let's talk about the first midterms. And let's just go back to Richard Nixon. So we can go, you know, Nixon, Carter, I won't go through Reagan, all the Ford,
Bushes.
Bush's 41 and 43, Clinton
here's especially
the point.
In 94, but go
right.
ahead, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 54 seats in the House. One president in the first midterm picked up seats, and that was President George W. Bush after the horrific 9/11 in 2002. So these are normally horrible. And the president's popularity and his job performance matters. What also matters is what's going on. The Republicans lost seats in 1982. Why? We were in the midst of a recession. What happened to Bill Clinton in 1994, as you point out? Well, we had an unpopular tax hike. The economy, blah, 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 52 seats. Let's go to the biggest loss in that period for a party, and that was Barack Obama in his first midterm in 2010. What was going on? In the spring of 2010, the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, it's now popular. It was not popular back then, and we were still in the throes of the Great Recession, 62 seats in the House. Think about that for a minute. So we would expect to have the midterm be a referendum on the president. But I will tell you, when a majority of Democrats and a majority of Republicans say one of two things, Democrats, I'm voting in this midterm. You know why? Because I'm casting a vote against the president of the United States. This is a vote saying, I don't like him. We'd like to have him out of office. The second thing that they're casting a vote on, Democrats, we want our party to regain control of the Congress. Conversely, what are Republicans voting on? They're voting to do what?
Just the opposite.
Exactly. Just the opposite. In fact, here I don't want to get into too many numbers, but here it is. Two in three, 67% of those who plan to vote for a Democratic congressional candidate are casting their ballot mainly as a vote against President Trump and Republicans in Congress, while three in four of those who plan to vote for the Republican candidate for Congress are casting their vote mainly to support President Trump and to keep Republicans in control of Congress. And the percentage there is 74%.
Now,
imagine
again,
that.
Let's go back in history. Have you seen numbers like
no.
that where the president was the top issue?
Not to the extent. Yeah, presidents have been the top issue, but not to this extent. And I mean, this is absolutely remarkable when you look at what this election's about. Is it about primarily about the economy? Eh. Is it about foreign policy? Eh. Is it about immigration? You get where I'm heading with this. Now, people do cite, for example, in the governor's race, education, and
that's,
you know, there's
one,
some
yeah.
specific issues there. But this is a big difference, largely, I think, because of the polarization and because the controversy. Whether you like President Trump or not, you can't argue that he's not controversial, that his style and the way he leads, the way he governs, you can't say it's not controversial.
All right. Well, let's follow up on that a little bit. In the poll, 38% say that Trump is doing an excellent or good job.
Right.
Now, that approval rating is about the same as Barack Obama at this point in
our
presidency.
State. In our state.
In our state, right. Now, Obama supporters may find that hard to believe.
Well, but what happened in 2010?
Well, we're coming out of the recession and, you know, but what, affordable
but
care.
Well, who won the governorship in Pennsylvania? A guy named Tom Corbett.
Right,
remember
so
that?
Republican. Yeah. I don't know if you say wave, but yeah. yeah.
Well, won pretty convincingly. And then who took back control of the State House of Representatives in 2010?
Well,
you got it.
Right.
The Democrats had controlled it from 2006. The so, I mean, then what happens as a result of the low job performance and the unpopularity is that changes take place in the political system, and, you know, actually in the governance system, and we saw it in our state. And so, similarly, this election right now looks like a blue wave. Now, I've characterized it pretty much the way Larry Sabato down at the University of Virginia has characterized it. I think right now we're looking at what I call a light blue wave. You follow me? We're not looking at a 2010 wave that was a red wave, or 2006 when the Democrats had a wave in their favor. That was the unpopularity of the Iraq War. But the real key to me is, imagine a president. We are not in an active war around the world, right? We can disagree with the president on
Afghanistan,
this,
but still,
this,
people
yeah,
kind of take it for
I got
granted.
It.
It's been so long.
Yeah, that's true. But the voters don't cite a particular foreign policy activity as a major reason for voting either Democratic or Republican. Let's go to point number two. You can argue about how good or bad the economy is, but if you talk to most economists, the revival out of the recession, the Great Recession, is real. And you can argue whether it started under Obama or not. We don't need to go there. 4.1% GDP growth, lowest unemployment in history for African Americans and for Hispanics, stock market booming, and about a third of the people that we interviewed said that they got a wage hike as a result, you know, an increase in their pay as a result of what?
The tax cut. Yeah,
the tax cut. So wages are going up, not rapidly, but they are starting to improve a bit. With almost any other president, you and I chatted about this before we went on air, what? The job performance would be
through the roof.
Yeah, yeah, out of sight.
Yeah, which leads me to believe that this president will never get above that 40 yeah. to 45% yeah. job approval rating.
Yep.
You know, whether he's reelected or not, that's another story.
Right.
But
you make a great point. 40. I look real clear politics for your listeners out there. There's a site, and I'm sure many of your folks cover politics and follow it carefully. Real Clear Politics keeps the averages of all these things. And we can talk about the governor's election, Senate election in our state in a moment if you want. So here's the point. The president's job performance, 43.5, 43.6, 44% in that range for the past 6-7 months. In other words, we've not seen, since modern polling began, that kind of stability. That goes to the very point you made earlier, how stable the president's job performance is. Now, there may be some evidence that given the situation that last week with, you know, Paul Manafort. And,
well, yeah, the Mueller investigation may have an impact.
That's exactly right. And there could be some information that is forthcoming that might affect it. But overall, the job performance has remained remarkably stable. And that goes to the polarization that we talked about. 40% of voters in the country support him. Among Republicans, it's, as we pointed out, 85, 86, 88%, you know, give him a positive job performance, blah, blah, blah. And that's the key to understanding this.
You know, I wonder, you know, this week there's been a lot said about Senator John McCain.
Yeah.
With the senator died this week,
yep.
Last weekend, I should say. But anyway, talking about McCain's willingness to reach across the aisle and to work with Democrats. I'm wondering, okay, you said yourself that moderates are being squeezed.
Right.
I think back to Arlen Specter said, you know, there's not a place for me in the U.S. Senate because, you know,
well,
the polarization.
Well, he used to say, my favorite line was, Arlen Specter used to say that the moderates in the Senate are down to me and the two women from Maine. He was referring to the two female
right.
United States senators from
Maine. And Susan Collins
Maine.
Is still there.
Yeah, but, that's correct.
But what it leads me to believe, and kind of pessimistically, is that there's not a whole lot of room for compromise when you have parties that are so divided, not just parties, but Americans in their points of view, their political points of view, that are so divided. Is there room for compromise in getting anything done?
You're onto the key of the problem that I think we face in American government right now. The polarization is so intense, and the disagreements so fundamental to their viewpoints, and the dislike for each other. Here's something else that I've talked about, and it's in a speech that I give. And I could be talking about the Pennsylvania, we could be talking about Pennsylvania government or the federal government. Right now, the big difference is the men and women who serve us don't like each other personally, and they don't trust each other. So how do you make a deal with someone that you don't like and you don't trust? And those levels of dislike and mistrust or distrust are higher, in my humble judgment, than anything we've seen. And some of that has to do with my own, you know, knowledge of what goes on, particularly in the Pennsylvania legislature that I followed for 30 years. And, you know, I know lawmakers, I know the relationship, in some cases, the relationship that they have with each other. Fundamentally, it's not good. It's not good. And you're exactly right. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. Mm. So compromise is literally out of the question.
We'll talk more about that and more about the poll in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College. We're talking about the latest F&M poll that was out yesterday and has a whole lot of information there. And we're talking about the president. We'll be talking about the U.S. Senate race and gubernatorial race here in Pennsylvania in just a few minutes. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. A reminder, York City development and revitalization. It's the topic for the next Smart Talk road trip on September 6th at Martin Library in York. Join us from 9 to 10 a.m. for the live broadcast. RSVP at WITF.org/events. Terry, have you ever been to a Smart Talk road trip?
I don't think I have.
See, you don't know what you're missing.
Oh, no, I know about him.
I know.
I listen to you all the time. And I think you enjoy that more than anything else in your job.
I have a good time with
nothing
it.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I encourage listeners out there, you want to talk about it. It's not just York, but many of these things are consistent.
Well, here's
with
what's fascinating. If you go around, and particularly in central Pennsylvania, the historic nature of, I mean, you can say that about any place, but boy, we have a lot of rich history and culture here. And I think that, plus, I mean, you can go, you travel a mile from where we're sitting, or I live in Lancaster, probably a mile and a half, and you're in rural and small town Pennsylvania.
It is certainly unique, that is for sure.
It really is.
Yeah. Let's take a phone call from Jim in Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Jim.
It's always good to when Dr. Madonna is on. This may not be very compelling radio because I'm going to agree with just about everything that he had to say.
Glad you're thinking of compelling radio.
We like that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
Jim, go ahead.
It's just a real shame that we don't have any more conservative politicians who have friends on the other side. And, you know, it's noteworthy that John McCain has passed away.
Right.
He was probably the last of that now dead breed. There used to be senators like John McCain and Alan Simpson and Arlen Specter and other politicians like
Joe
Tom
Lieberman,
Reed,
Joe Lieberman,
who really moved across the party lines and tried to reach consensus. I don't think we've had this much divisiveness since the Civil War, and sometimes I wonder if it's not going to take another Civil War for it to change. I think it's also true on the Democratic side, but probably not as much. You guys, I know who Robert, she has said, of course, she grew up, her father was a congressman. She said that she thinks part of the problem is that politicians don't stay in D.C. anymore. As soon as Congress is out of session, they leave. When she was growing up, she says that the politicians used to stay in town and they would get to know each other, go to events together, and none of that's happening anymore. And as Terry was saying, the politicians across the party lines just don't trust each other anymore. Yeah. I wonder what Terry has to say about that.
Thank you.
I think you're right about that, Jim. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I remember back in the day when I was lobbying for public higher education when I was on the faculty at Millersville University, and lawmakers in different parties would have dinner and have, you know, go to lunch and have dinner with their, bring their families into town. They would play golf. They would socialize. And the good thing about the socialization aspect is that you create a bond and a friendship. So if, you know, I may not agree with you, but at least I trust you and we might be able to find a way to work it out. The other problem is because of, it's not just exclusively this factor, gerrymandering, you got folks in districts where, you know, 65-70% of the vote goes their way, and the polarization is so great that their biggest fear they have is if they make too many deals or compromises, they face a primary election.
Right. Primary is one of the biggest fears that today's elected official faces, or incumbent faces.
Yeah, because with each passing decennial census and redistricting, there are fewer and fewer competitive seats. And the polarization is so extreme that it's hard to have a, you know, many lawmakers don't represent a huge proportion of their population in the other party or with a very different political philosophy, right? So what you're doing is basically going to your base for everything, and you're finding all this agreement with them, and there's just not as much. But remember, you also have those views. If you're a Democrat, look at the rise in the Democratic Party of the so-called progressives. You know, that's liberal by another name. And look at the agenda that's coming out. Now, could you see somebody arguing for Medicare for all, eliminate
free
ICE,
for all.
Free public, blah, blah, blah. Could you imagine that in many districts in Pennsylvania, congressional? I certainly couldn't.
Well, you do now.
Yeah,
because I go back to the primary, and I think I've even mentioned this on the air, that almost all the Democratic congressional candidates that were on our program, and I say almost all, not all of them, but almost all of them, they were for just what you mentioned.
Yeah.
And the Republican candidates, almost all.
All against.
All against, and support President Trump's agenda.
Yeah.
Getting back to the poll, 48% of voters polled say they prefer a Democrat for the U.S. House compared to a Republican at 39%. What's that tell us, if anything?
Well, there's an aspect of the election that deals with which party has the advantage in congressional elections. It shows that's the what we call the generic ballot question. If the election were held today, would you vote for a Democratic candidate? Typically, when that goes up and favors one party strongly, it's one factor, just one, that leads for that party to pick up seats in the House of Representatives. So back in 2010, if I remember this correctly, the Republicans had a plus four. Nationally, the generic ballot question is, the last time I looked, 7, 7.1, something in that range. It's been pretty stable for a while. In our state, it's 9. Translation.
Plus 9 for Democrats.
Yes, plus 9. Now, translation, because of the redistricting and the Supreme Court map that you've talked about, I think you're ad nauseum when it came out.
Nothing's ad nauseum.
Yeah, I know, but you get my point.
I know, we talked about
it
a lot.
You didn't add, and you shouldn't have. I mean, you were doing the right thing by talking about it. So now the Democrats have districts, particularly down in the southeastern part of the state, where they're going to pick up the seats because of the new map. But they're also going to benefit by the generic ballot question. Translation, Democrats, voters are telling more that Democrats are going to have an edge. They're going to vote more Democratic than Republican in congressional elections.
But, now, there's a but here. I'm going to question
that's
on this,
fine.
And this is a little bit of methodology here. Doesn't that break down along the lines of those who are surveyed? There are more Democrats than Republicans who are surveyed, because there are more people registered as
that's
Democrats.
True.
You follow your parallel with the registration here in Pennsylvania. But when we talked about that divisiveness and people, Democrats that are, you know, so hell-bent on voting against Donald Trump, Republicans other way around.
Right.
So don't those numbers kind of, aren't they consistent with the registration?
Yeah, but here's the point. If Democrats are more interested in voting than Republicans, and there are more Democrats than Republicans, what does that tell you? Democrats are more likely to vote. They are telling us they are following the election more carefully, and they are more likely to turn out. And if there are more of them, why doesn't that give them an advantage if they're proportionately going to vote more? We saw the reverse of that in 2010. I keep referring to 2010.
Well, history says a lot to us, yeah.
Yeah, because that was, the Republicans had an advantage in those factors. That's a big deal.
But, you know, again, I always, when your poll comes out, the newspapers, radio, TV stations tend to focus on kind of the horse race aspect, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But I always look for some things that a lot of people don't discuss or maybe don't notice. With even though more Democrats than Republicans were polled, more people who were polled identify themselves as conservative than liberal.
Yeah.
Even though more Democrats were polled.
Because there are more conservatives than there are. And remember, in Pennsylvania, we do have Democrats who live in rural and small town Pennsylvania who consider themselves conservative. Many of these voters, by the way, and this is important, live in rural and small town parts of Pennsylvania. They're conservative. They may have maintained their Democratic voter registration edge, but you know what they've done in the last couple of election cycles? Vote Republican. That's why Donald Trump carried our state. He won 23 Pennsylvania counties, Scott, by 69-70% of the vote, and guess where they were? They were out in the Southwest, in Washington and Westmoreland and Greene and Cambria and Fayette and those old. These voters are basically conservative. Many of them are still, not all, they're registered Democrats, but they're voting Republican.
Union strongholds, but
exactly.
Used to be referred to as Reagan Democrats.
Exactly. And before that, they were New Deal Democrats, FDR, John F. Kennedy Democrats. Exactly.
Speaking of which, we have, and you know, we all, you know, we talked earlier about the word rigged being used today. Polls, especially after 2016, the election, there were a lot of people who questioned the validity, the consistency of polls.
Good.
We have a listener who says Hillary Clinton as the 2016 presidential election winner in Pennsylvania. That tells you what to know about your reliability.
Well, we went through, the Center for Opinion Research did an exit poll. You and I have talked about this after the poll. And so did the national exit polls were done, and here's what we found out, that 15-20% of the people in Pennsylvania changed their mind or made up their mind in the last 10 days of the election. Two-thirds of them voted for President Trump. We at FNM were not in the field. we got out of the field, meaning we called our last voter 10 days before the election. We also missed, and there's a debate about this, the so-called Comey effect. Remember, the FBI director said he was opening up the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. That was about, what, 8 days before the election, right? Something like that, 7 or 8 days. So the point is, and here's something that I personally believe, given I traveled all over the state and gave a lot of talks, I think there was a reluctance of some voters to say they were willing to vote for Trump. And I think that may have also been part of the polling situation that occurred. Now, that's less scientific. It's just, I remember, I told you this story. I went and gave a speech in a rural part of our state, and a guy came up to me afterwards and said, Dr. Madonna, there's something going on here that I want you to know about. I live in a community with about 75 houses, and there were no signs up for either candidate. I came home one day from work, saw one Trump sign. I came home the next day and saw 5 Trump signs. By the end of 2 weeks, there were 20 Trump signs or something like that. You get the point. So until people, you know, and until folks were certain that their support for the president was going to be accepted, socially accepted, they were a little reluctant. Now, again, I think some of that was going on in the polls as well.
Well, a couple things here. First of all, polls, and it's always good to remind people, are not predictions. It's a snapshot at the time. But following up on the listener's question, if it's a poll was taken 10 days before the election and there's that big of a change, then mm-hmm. can't people question how accurate a poll is?
Well, you can raise the question, but as you just accurately point out, it's a snapshot in time. I don't think we've ever said that you can't find change, that change can't take place. You could have some big event that could change
things. And the Comey thing was one of them.
And here's another aspect of it. The national polls had Hillary winning by 3. I think the Real Clear Politics average was in the 4 range, 4 by 4. She did get 2.9 million votes or something around 2% more nationally. So it's many of the state polls that weren't reliable that, in a sense, had a problem depending on the nature of the problem. Our problem was we were out of the field after change occurred. And, you know,
another email from Sarah in Lancaster. She says, I work at the polls. Voters split tickets because they are confused. At the local level, candidates cross-file between parties, so voters vote the simple party line. Then there's certain offices where you can cross-file. Voters are disengaged because wise, charismatic candidates who want to get things done across the aisle don't get attention. Unfortunately, extreme candidates get media attention, especially those who are belligerent and foul-mouthed. If the opposing candidate reacts calmly or ignores the insult, they're viewed as soft. This also gets negative press. Neither type makes for a strong leader.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain truth about, you know, to the argument that who gets the most media attention. But you also get media that's, you know, liberal, more likely to support Democrats, conservative, more likely to support Republicans, and that also has an effect. But remember, it's what media are you following?
All right. Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because as I just said to you a few minutes ago, I always look through the poll to see if there's a nugget there that is a surprise. This was a surprise to me, okay, not the first question, but the second part. And you said I shouldn't be surprised. But anyway, that you ask, the question was, what is your prime source for getting news and information? Mm-hmm. The majority of people in your poll said it was cable television news. Okay, that's not a surprise. Radio, by the way, was like fourth. Folks, I would encourage you, get more news from WITF.
Yeah.
But anyway, the second part of that question is, okay, of the cable news networks, which network do you rely on most often?
Which network do you rely on? And
right.
I know where you're going ahead with this.
And Fox News was number one by far. It wasn't even close. It was like 19, 20 points over CNN. That surprised me. That was a nugget that surprised me.
Yeah, but
you told me that I shouldn't be surprised.
No, because look, if you take 43% in the FNM poll, in the August poll done last week, Fox News Channel, 43%. of the people we interviewed, rely on that the most for their news. But guess what? Would you agree that CNN and MSNBC lean to the left? You want to disagree
yes.
with that?
Certainly MSNBC. I know that the president would disagree with
All
CNN.
Right. So you got 42% if you take both of them combined. You see what I mean? The Democrats
so split.
Have a more diverse pool of places where they get their news from. Conservatives more likely, and Republicans, to get their news from Fox News Channel. So you got PBS thrown in there as well. And that matters. So it's not that Fox News dominates it completely, because you have to consider the other news sources that we might consider
right. okay.
liberal.
So it's more diverse on the Democratic side.
More diverse on the Democratic side. Right. That's correct.
I still think the radio thing, would they be better off?
Oh, we love that, yeah? I'm with you.
At least on the public radio. Thing. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, Franklin Marshall pollster and political analyst. We're talking about the latest FNM poll, which was released yesterday. A lot of information there. A stable poll, as Terry Madonna has described it, meaning that there hasn't been a lot of changes over the last few polls. But a lot of questions here. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. If you have a question or a comment, you also can go to WITS Facebook page. You can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Another reminder, coming up on Tuesday, Smart Talk, we don't have a show on Labor Day Monday. Pennsylvania Secretary of Corrections John Wetzel joins us to discuss why prisons have been on lockdown here over the last few days. This is a big issue behind the prison walls here in Pennsylvania. Also want to remind you that York City development and revitalization is the topic for the next Smart Talk road trip on September 6th at Martin Library in York. Join us from 9 to 10 a.m. for the live broadcast. RSVP at WITF.org/events. I want to talk about that stability before we get back to the telephone and some other questions, Terry. This, I was looking, because one of the things you do with your poll is you compare results from past polls.
Mm-hmm.
There has not been a lot of change in these numbers.
It's unbelievable.
Well, what does that say, that they've been so, the numbers have been so stable?
It just says that there's been no change, that there's nothing that has influenced the electorate to cast doubt, for an individual voter about their choice. The choices. Now, there's still a fair number of people in both elections who are undecided. But let's just, I don't want to bore people with a lot of numbers. Let's just go back and we'll take a look. Let's take a look at the governor's election. The Real Clear Politics average, that's the average of the last four or five polls that get done, is about 15 points woefully.
Now, when you say polls, you mean not just
I'm
yours,
going to
but
go.
Others.
Independent right. polls that were done. So let's go back to the fourth month of this year, and the Morning Call Muhlenberg poll had Wolf ahead 16. Let's go back to the Suffolk University poll done in June. 13-point Wolf lead. Let's go to the NBC Marist poll done last week, a 14-point Wolf lead, and our poll, 17 points. I mean, whoa. So we go from 13 to 17. That is margin of error stuff, all remarkably stable. And these are four independent polls, four. None of these polls are tied to a political party. These are not pollsters who do work for candidates, you know what I mean? They're completely devoid from any politics. And the same is true for Senator Casey. The Real Clear Politics average there is a little under 15, 14.8 the last time I looked. So if we go back to the Muhlenberg morning call poll, in April? 16, Suffolk University, 50. These are leads by
Casey
Senator
over
Casey
Lou Barletta.
Over Lou Barletta. So here's what they are. 16, 15, 15, and we have it at 13. I mean, talk about the stability. And they all show pretty much the same thing. More Democratic enthusiasm than Republicans, you know. Democrats more likely to vote. Democrats following the election more closely. when you go through all the dynamics of it, these polls are all very, very similar.
Okay, when you say the numbers you just quoted from your poll, is that likely voters?
It's likely voters.
Okay. 13 points for Bob Casey over Lou Barletta. With Bob Casey, you're talking about a name. You know, name recognition is not a problem.
Nope.
With Bob Casey, between his name and his father's name. You know, two-time incumbent, a lot of money, a lot more
right.
money than his Republican challenger. 13 points does not sound like a lot to me with all those factors.
Yeah, but a double-digit lead is a pretty significant
lead. Is that what pollsters look
yeah,
at?
Yeah, when you get the double digits, and again, let's go to the Real Clear Politics average. Remember what we're talking about here. Now, some of these polls were done months ago, but we're still talking about the average lead for both candidates in the 15-point. In the 15-point lead, that's pretty big. In fact, if you go to some of the websites and some of the analysts that do algorithms and other ways to figuring, they don't even have the Pennsylvania governor's race as one of the top elections to follow. And the national interest in both of these elections is not very high. Why? Because there are many more elections in states where governor's elections, Senate elections are more competitive.
There are
double-digit leads. Double-digit lead on Labor Day, you know, as we get to Labor Day weekend, is pretty substantial. I'm not saying that something can't occur to shake it up. I would never say that something more profound couldn't take place that would change the direction.
Is it true to say that voters, people who are looking for information from polls, should look at trends rather than what
one
a poll,
poll or one,
one
poll.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
I've always believed that. Go ahead.
All right, I want to make sure we get to a phone call here. Greg is in Millersville. Greg, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. Yes. To make a comment about the prior poll about where most people get their news. My wife and I are both born-again Democrats, and we will have to agree. We go to Fox News to get our news because we have discovered over many years that CNN, you only get one side of the story. It's usually the left or left of center, or PBS, I think, is almost worse. And so we go to Fox News. We've been turning off PBS. We've been turning off CNN. And we're Democrats. We want to hear both sides of the story. And I think Fox News does a great job. They have both sides, and they present it. That's my comment, and I agree with that poll.
All right. Thank you very much for your call.
Now, Terry,
before you, I just want to make a comment about Fox News. A lot of people confuse or lump in the Fox News with the news versus the commentary.
Right.
Because a lot of the shows, like Tucker Carlson,
Hannity.
Very much so, are opinions.
Yeah.
The news itself, not saying it's straight down the middle, but at the same time, it's not as partisan as the talk shows.
Yeah. My general advice to people, and I say this to students and others, is, why don't you just mix it up and watch a little bit of MSNBC, a little bit of CNN, a little bit of Fox, of course, NPR, PBS stations. I mean, I think that's an important way to keep the balance. And the same with reading newspapers. I mean, I try to read the editorial pages of the New York Times, Washington Post, and guess what? The Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal, yeah.
I think that's all, and the same internally. Now I've got you can get these services, whether it's Politics PA in this state or Capital Wire, which you have to subscribe to, and I do, where you can get a variety of opinions because they run so many different stories from newspapers. I mean, I think that's really helpful.
We have an email here from one of your colleagues, Fletcher McClellan, at Elizabethtown College.
Yep.
And glad that Professor McClellan tunes in and has a question here. How far could the blue wave, dark or light, extend into the state House and Senate races? Do you think Governor Wolf will turn his attention to state legislative races if it appears that he will cruise to victory?
Yeah, that's a great question. Here's the situation. There are 100, and if I got the numbers right, and they change almost daily, 121 Republicans in the State House of Representatives. The magic number there is 102. I suspect the Democrats are going to pick up some seats. Picking up enough seats to take over the Pennsylvania House, I think, is going to be very, very difficult. There are 34 Republican senators out of, 50? Translation, so the Democrats pick up three or four. It's hard for me to believe it falls below the 30 number. So, yes, the Democrats are likely to pick up seats. At the end of the day, the legislature probably, notice how I'm using the adverb here, probably remains in Republican hands. And you raise a good question about whether Governor Wolf, given the lead that he has, does start to weigh in on gubernatorial election, on legislative elections. I don't have an answer to that. I don't know what he's going to do. I know one thing. He's only agreed to one debate, and that's created quite a stir around, because typically they would do three, right? One in the east, one in the west, and one right here in the heartland of the state.
And
South
Alex
Central
Trebek,
PA.
Alex Trebek moderating it.
Yeah.
I have no idea what kind of job
wrong with that, but there, as long as what? As long as we have a couple of other debates. Yeah. And I think everybody would agree to that. But Fletcher's on to something. That's a great, great question.
We only have a couple of minutes left. Joe and Lemoyne ask, please discuss any poll numbers about the Scott Perry, George Scott race. What are some comments Dr. Donna has on that race? You didn't poll that, but...
No. But here's the problem that Congressman Perry has. The district, but when the Supreme Court redrew the boundary lines, they threw in Dauphin County. And they also, the district still includes York City and Harrisburg City and the suburbs of those places, which are more Democratic. So in other words, the district has become more competitive. Most national observers think it's a toss-up, but it probably still slightly leans Republican. Here's the question. You raised the question about a blue wave, right? How big is the blue wave? You following me? If the blue wave is sizable enough, it could cause a Perry upset. I'm not predicting that. I'm merely saying that's the best hope. Or something going on in Dauphin County, which we know Dauphin County and countywide has gone Democratic in recent years. Bottom line, no one knows for sure. In a column that Mike Young and I wrote, we put it in the toss-up category just because we just don't know the size of the blue wave, and I've not seen any independent polls. I'm sure, given the nature of that district, there will be some.
And this goes back to what you had talked about earlier, there not being a lot of national attention in Pennsylvania's race.
Correct.
For governor
or
U.S. Senate. But there is a lot of attention nationally because of control of the U.S. House in our congressional races.
Right, yeah. Mike Young and I think in the column, we went back and looked at each one of the congressional districts. I think right now, 13 Republicans, of course, we've had resignations, but they've held 13 of the seats since the 2011 redistricting to 5 Democratic seats. We think, and most, I think many national analysts think, the Democrats could pick up between 3 and 5 seats.
A couple questions I want to get in quickly in a minute or so.
Okay.
Candy wants to know if class factors, or how do you factor in class in your polling?
Well, we ask people about a whole variety of things, income, about education. I mean, there's a whole series of ways to get at that. And we know, for example, based on other polls and ours, the nature of the support that President Trump has, his opponents, we know them by a whole range of demographics.
Terry, I want to thank you very much
My
for being
pleasure.
With us today. But Dave had a question, Tower City. First of all, he says he listens to Smart Talk and WITF, then goes to cable. But he wants to know what the G stands for in Dr. G. Terry Madonna.
It's George. Now,
George.
George, Catholic boy, Terry's not a Catholic name.
Dr. G. Terry Madonna, Franklin Marshall Cobb. Terry, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Again, coming up on Tuesday's Smart Talk, we have Pennsylvania Secretary of Corrections, John Wetzel, so be sure to tune in. Also, think about that Smart Talk road trip in York next week.